Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Parting Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. On today's French Open semi-final catch-up,
Stefanos Tsitsipas sinks Zverev,
Novak stuns Nadal,
and Barbora Krejcikova aims for singles and doubles glory.
Kim, what a Friday night we have just had, literally a few minutes ago. Novak Djokovic versus Rafael Nadal. French Open men's semi-final, the second one of today, and it served up an absolute classic. That third set alone felt momentous. There was drama at the end with fans allowed to stay. I mean, as many of our listeners will know, you're a diehard Rafa fan. I mean, that was a bit of a nerve shredder, wasn't it?
Oh, Joel, I feel like I've aged about 20 years. That's why I needed the bucket, so no one can see my face anymore, because it's not pleasant. Yeah, it's been very emotional. I've gone through a whole roller coaster. I'm sure any Rafa fans listening, I know we've got a lot of Rafa fans who listen. So big hugs to everyone. And you know, it was bound to happen at some point, wasn't it, Joel, that Rafa would lose again at Roland Garros. Obviously, he has lost twice at Roland Garros before. And I know that you sent me something on WhatsApp saying that yes, that Rafa loses every 6 years at Roland Garros.
It was like a prophecy, I think, coming true, because in the build-up, I noticed that if you look at Rafa's losses at Roland Garros, his first loss was in round four in 2009 against Söderling. His second loss to Djokovic was 6 years later in the quarterfinals in 2015. And 6 years later, even more so, he's lost again to Novak Djokovic, but in the semifinals. So there's a weird sort of pattern developing there, purely coincidence. But yeah, we've had a absolutely fantastic match, you know, probably one of the best matches in their, you know, long and storied rivalry. It was across four sets. It was in the, you know, the night session. And, you know, so much of the drama of that match was the fact that it started so late because of Tsitsipas and Zverev going five. And I think the fact that the longer it went into the night, the conditions, I felt like it had a bit of a factor in the outcome of the match.
Yeah, I was always a bit sort of skeptical, I suppose. I just always felt that it would favor like Novak being in the night session. The later it got, the conditions, I always feel like the night session crowd, they're always a bit up for some aggro or something, and I just felt that wasn't really helping Rafa. I mean, just a note on that, I do feel like the French Tennis Federation should probably have scheduled the start of play today a bit earlier. You know, perhaps they could have started it 2 hours early. Just the fact that you've got two men's semi-finals that both potentially will go five sets. And you've also got two players in the second one who take their sweet time before serving, you know. So I don't know. But I mean, as it came to it, you know, what we were all expecting was the fact that the fans were going to have to file out at local time, 11 o'clock. But in the end, the French government seemed to have made an exception for Rafa and Novak, because they said they could stay. And in the end, I suppose it didn't go on much longer after that anyway. But how crazy is that they've actually changed like French law?
I mean, that was just a testament, I think, to how massive this match was and how kind of, I guess, far reaching it was. It wasn't just a marvel for the fans. It had ramifications with regards to the Paris curfew, because I don't think anyone was really expecting there to be any give or leeway. But we got this announcement, I think, what, 2-3 minutes came through on the TV that they said fans would be able to stay. Now, I don't know if that's because they felt like, I don't know, if there was going to be a riot on their hands, or people weren't just going to leave or obey, you know, the rule. But I'm sort of glad it did happen, because I think, you know, I think we've seen over the last kind of couple of weeks that, you know, tennis has on a few occasions at this tournament sort of shot itself in the foot. You know, I particularly think about the, you know, the Naomi Osaka kind of situation, the scheduling with the night matches, you know, particularly with that imbalance between the, you know, the male matches and the female matches. And again, this was, you know, a lot of people were looking at this because it felt like it was nailed on, to be honest, you know, with kind of 2 hours approaching, one hour approaching, that, you know, people were going to almost be forced out. But I'm sort of glad that kind of common sense prevailed and they were able to, you know, everyone there was able to kind of witness this kind of really, you know, it was a really significant match, I think, you know, significant in the rivalry, significant in tennis in general. You know, some people talking about this as particularly that third set and that tiebreak as one of the best sets that has happened on a, you know, happened on a clay court ever. And personally, I don't think that is an exaggeration.
I was very surprised that there were so many breaks of serve, I have to say, especially in that third set. And it was very unpredictable in the sense that, you know, Novak served for a 5-3 and then Rafa pegged him back. But before you even got to that point, there'd been quite a few breaks anyway. And then obviously Rafa had a set point on Novak's serve at 6-5 and then it went to the tie break. I do think Rafa, he missed that forehand, didn't he? Which he really should have got in the tie break. And I sort of think he'd be ruining that one a bit. And then obviously Novak clinched it. And I think that really was the pivotal moment, just because I think they'd by that point been playing for about 3 hours or something, three and a bit hours. And if you've got to then win two more sets to come back from that, it's, you know, Rafa's obviously incredibly fit, but he is 35 now. And perhaps 10 years ago, I did just feel that physically he wasn't where he has been in the past. And I don't, you know, he was sweating so much tonight. And I don't know if that was just the weather conditions or maybe there was, you know, he wasn't feeling 100%. I'm not sure. But I did just feel like that it, you know, was going to be a bit of a mammoth ask. And I know that if anyone could do it, it's Rafa, but it really did kind of fall away from him in that fourth set. And I just think it was too much to ask in the end.
It was quite surprising, I think, that fourth set, because Nadal went up a break early, but then I think Djokovic just kind of you know, broke Nadal, which is not something that happens very often, and kind of reeled six games off in a row to win it. I mean, he came through 3-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-2, and it was a real kind of roller coaster, because, you know, let's go back to the beginning and that first set. I mean, Rafa went up 5-love. You know, it was very much like the final last year. Novak trying drop shots at the start of the match, not really working. Nadal fetching them all. And it was a really impressive start by Nadal. And although Djokovic kind of came back into it, I think he needed like 5 or 6 set points to kind of get him through. It was a really impressive opening from him.
Yeah, I think that helped Novak, the fact that he got a few games on board and made it so tough for Rafa serving it out. I think if Rafa had like won that set to love, you know, going into the second set, it may well have gone the way of the final last year. It may have really dented Novak's confidence and his kind of perception of his own chances. But the fact that he made a bit more of that first set, I think certainly helped him. And then, yeah, he was just, it was very different to last year, wasn't it? I think where Rafa got on top really early and had such a lead before Novak started to get into the match. I think in this one that the feel of it was very different from like 5-2 onwards in the first set, basically.
Yeah, and it was definitely kind of, I think, a switch up in play from Djokovic in that second set. He focused on Nadal's backhand, and Nadal hit 67 backhands in the second set and only 49 forehands. So you can see that he was really kind of focusing and pinning Nadal to that side, and it was really kind of opening up for Djokovic. And once he won that second set, we were into the real, I think, piece de resistance of the match, that kind of third set, which, I mean, it took 80 minutes, I think, to get to the tiebreak. And it was just spellbinding tennis. And this really felt like the moment that if Djokovic was going to dethrone the King of Clay or win, this was the set that he was going to need to win, because you genuinely felt that whoever was going to win that set was probably going to have the momentum to pull them through.
Yeah, and now I'm looking back thinking, oh, if only Rafa had like won that set point, or, you know.
It was incredible he got to that set point, because I genuinely felt in that set, Djokovic had about 5 or 6 times to be able to kind of put that one to bed. And then all of a sudden, Nadal had a set point from nowhere. And I was kind of like, I was actually thinking, this is why he's so good on a clay court, because he is such a fighter and has that never say die attitude. But Djokovic was able to kind of put away that set point that Nadal had, and was able to really kind of bring it in the tiebreak.
For sure. And I was thinking, where's Lorenzo Musetti when you need him in a tiebreak? Because, you know, he's unbeaten in tiebreaks so far this year. And obviously, Rafa needed a bit of Dan Evans in that fourth set to turn it around. But yeah, it's not going to lie, I am gutted, obviously. But I also appreciate the fact that this was one of the best matches that we're probably going to see, and we won't be having these two playing semi-finals of Grand Slams or finals, whatever, for much longer. So we do need to appreciate this sort of insane tennis that, like, we're watching and seeing, because it's probably not going to be replicated for a long, long time. And, you know, they've both made history in their careers, and we sort of we should appreciate the fact that whoever wins the match. And, you know, it's gutting, isn't it? It's a shame there can't be, in a way, like a draw sometimes, because you just think, but like, we've been treated to some, you know, fantastic tennis tonight, and it will go down in, you know, the history books of their rivalry, because they've had some, I mean, it was probably up there with the 2012 final they had here, 2013 semi, and obviously Rafa won both of those. So it was bound to happen at some point, wasn't it, that he would lose one.
That tiebreak in the third set was giving me flashbacks to Federer Nadal at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
In 2008.
Yeah.
And that was the level. And we don't often see that level. And, you know, watching it on TV in the UK, the commentary teams weren't saying a lot. And I think, you know, the reason for that was we were all just kind of breathing this in and just feeding off of it, because the level was just, it was just so exceptional. And all you could just do was just have your jaw drop. It was just kind of like, there was no words to describe the tennis kind of going on. And, you know, I think there'll be people out there saying, like, this might be exaggerated or quite a bit of hyperbole, but I genuinely think, particularly for a semi-final, it was probably one of the highest quality semi-finals we've had in a Grand Slam. And, you know, a lot of people will again be saying it was just such a shame that matchup wasn't in the final, because you genuinely felt that the winner of that match should have deserved a trophy.
Yeah, I mean, damn Medvedev, it's all his fault. This would have been a final. Yes, I mean, although I have to say, I think it hurts less when your man loses in like the semi-final as opposed to the final. I know that might sound a bit weird, like you'd rather someone went around further, but I always feel like there's less sort of attention on the semis than the finals. And but anyway, I mean, we've got obviously Novak against Tsitsipas on Sunday. It's been an intense match tonight for Novak, but I'm sure, you know, as fit as he is, he'll be physically okay for Sunday. But yeah, we've actually had two quite thrilling semis, actually, because the first one was also thrilling in its own way, I suppose, and obviously delayed the start of Novak and Rafa by about an hour, I think, in the end. But I mean, what's your take? Do you think what we've seen from Novak tonight, obviously, is he now, I mean, he's got to be the hands down favourite for Sunday. You think it's sort of 90% chance that he's going to win, or do you see him falling? Because when he beat Rafa before in 2015, he ended up losing in the final to Stan the Man, but I don't think this time.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very hard to see. I think a lot of it will depend on Tsitsipas, but I think Tsitsipas will have to go to a level of tennis that he hasn't gone before. We've seen, I think, Novak Djokovic in the semi-final against Nadal, he's had to lay his cards on the table to show the level of tennis he can bring. And I think in that, particularly in that fourth set, it showed what he is kind of capable of. The number of defensive shots that he played that ended smack bang on the baseline to neutralize, you know, the Nadal attacking shots from the baseline was very, very impressive. And, you know, Tsitsipas is going to have to overcome that. And, you know, at the moment, I think it's quite a scary thought, because I really think with this match that Djokovic has shown kind of a level that has, that I think, you know, it probably deserves him to be the French Open champion. I know it's obviously nice that Tsitsipas is in his first French Open final, but going back to, you know, that quarterfinal against Berrettini, and, you know, that roar he had at the end of the match, as well as sort of, I think, spawning a million and one memes on social media, it really was a battle cry. And you could just tell in his, you know, just looking at his kind of facial expression and the, you know, the veracity of that cry, it was like he is here for business. And, you know, in this match, I think, you know, very, very different, I think, to the French Open final last year, where it was, you know, he was going after drop shots from point one, and he was kind of continuing with it, and it wasn't really working. He felt very, very kind of composed. It felt very, very like, very, very much like, you know, when he played Federer, you know, in the final at Wimbledon, I think in 2019, where he might not have been kind of maybe the favorite with the crowd. There certainly were chance, you know, for him, but I definitely felt that he kind of reveled in that, as he always does, and, you know, fed off of it. And that was one of the reasons that, you know, he kind of came through.
Yeah, I feel like Rafa and Fed fans, I want to give them all a big hug, because I can only imagine what Fed fans, you know, when Federer had those match points in that Wimbledon final. Oh my Lord. I mean, I can't even imagine. it's so tense and stressful when you're like a big fan of a player and you're going through all of that. So,
I mean, were you surprised, given that fourth set and how it kind of, let's be honest, it sort of petered out? Were you kind of surprised by that? Because there was definitely a next level of energy, I think, once the crowd found out that they were going to be able to stay. And Nadal, obviously, I think, rode that energy and broke Djokovic right at the start of that fourth set, but wasn't able to kind of continue. Were you surprised that he wasn't able to take it potentially to a fifth set? Because I definitely thought he obviously started the stronger in that fourth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just had a bit of a feeling that it wasn't going to be his night as it went on, to be honest. I think Novak had kind of sussed him out pretty well by that point, and like you said, was very composed compared to previous matches. And I mean, maybe it would have been better if the crowd had gone home, and that momentum, like having that break, might have helped Rafa, because I just felt that, I don't know. I don't know. I just felt there was something a bit off.
So just playing devil's advocate then, do you think, obviously, I am very much, was very happy that, you know, the crowd were able to stay. But let's say it went by the rule book and all the fans had to leave, and there was a 15 minute delay. So 5,000 fans left Philippe Chatrier. Do you think that potentially could have had an effect on the fourth set and how it went?
Well, it's impossible to say. I mean, if you go back to that Wimbledon final in 2008, you know, they had rain delays, and that may have helped Rafa then. I don't know. You just can't tell, can you? But I mean, I know it was an exceptional match tonight, but I also do think there should be some consistency with regards to rules. And I mean, Berrettini fans who had to leave on Wednesday might be a bit annoyed that they've just decided to change the rules for this match and not the other one the other day. So I don't know. I just feel like, I know the French Tennis Federation probably thought, oh, we can't be accused of ruining any more things this fortnight. So
I thought it was the one decision they got right, Kim.
Yeah, but I guess it shouldn't have come to this in the first place. Because
absolutely not. Yeah,
I think they should have started the matches earlier today. I'm not, you know, we were talking about this in the last match. I'm not a massive fan of having night sessions at what I see as a daytime kind of, you know, tennis event. But obviously that's the way the tournament's going. So, you know, we just have to, you know, back in the day, like 5 years ago, I guess they would have had to stop for bad light and come back tomorrow. So, you know, it is what it is. Obviously, the fact that Rafa's lost, you know, I'm a bit upset, I'm not gonna lie, but it's a fact of life. He's won 13 of these things, which is absolutely amazing. So, you know, I have to think about what he has achieved is phenomenal. And this match, like, Novak deserved to win. He was the better player tonight, so absolutely fair play to him.
Just going on then to the other semi-final, we just kind of briefly mentioned it, Tsitsipas versus Zverev. Tsitsipas coming through 6-3, 6-3, 4-6, 4-6, 6-3. So another five-setter. It was quite a quick five-setter, but nonetheless, a very sort of topsy-turvy match, with Tsitsipas winning the first two sets, then Zverev, and then Tsitsipas sort of rediscovering his form in that fifth set. I'm going to be honest, what I was probably most impressed with was Tsitsipas stopping the rot and stopping the momentum and winning that fifth set. You know, we were talking on WhatsApp whilst this is happening, and I was sort of thinking, you know, I thought Zverev was going to win this. I thought he was going to win this from two sets down, but you had a sneaking feeling that regardless of the scoreline, you felt that Tsitsipas was always going to come back.
Yeah, I just saw Zverev in a fifth set at a slam. I had memories of the final against Dominic Thiem in the US Open, where he sort of got extremely nervous at the end, didn't he? And, you know, failed to perform right when it mattered. And I just thought, I just thought Tsitsipas, you know, I know he dropped that two set lead, but I just thought that the energy and the momentum was with him still. So I thought he would be able to hold Zverev off. I'm a bit concerned maybe about how Tsitsipas might fare on Sunday, because, you know, he went two sets up, but I think there's a stat that he actually had only hit one, like, winner going into the third set or something ridiculous. So it was a lot more of it was the fact that Zverev was not playing particularly well, not serving very well, and Tsitsipas was, you know, quite tentative still. Obviously, he did go a breakdown in the second set, managed to peg Zverev back, but he wasn't exactly, I would say, the most convincing, even in those two sets that he won at the start.
He was five winners, 19 unforced errors in set one and set two combined.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
You would think you'd be losing both sets if that happened, wouldn't you?
Yeah, a bit mad on the stats.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, like, with Zverev, I don't think we saw his best tennis. And I think, you know, one of his kind of causes for concern will be, I think, you know, now we're sort of over Zverev kind of not getting to the second week of a Grand Slam. That was sort of problem number one, I think, for, you know, the earlier kind of part of his kind of career as a top seed. But I think now the next thing he really needs to address is his dreadful, dreadful win-loss record against top 10 players in best of five sets. He is 0-12 against top 10 players in best of five. He really doesn't do well against, you know, players that are around him. So, you know, there's definitely something to work on there. And, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a case of him just kind of coming up against Nadal or Djokovic. You know, he's lost to other players as well, as you said, like Thiem, Tsitsipas, Medvedev. So, you know, that's going to be something that he's going to need to work on, that even though, you know, he's probably feeling like he's doing okay in best of three, he's still not really kind of applying it to best of five. And even though, you know, he's one of the highest seeds in the competition, he had a pretty good route to the semis, he's still coming off all the time second best in, you know, when he's facing players that are sort of his similar ranking.
Yeah, he hadn't faced a seeded player until he got to this stage of the tournament, so I mean, which isn't his fault at all, but it you know, he really does need to get a big win, I suppose, against, like, well, a top 10 player at a slam. So maybe that, you know, he's obviously beaten top 10 players outside of the slams, but yeah, he seems to have, you know, been fairly consistent at slams of late, to be honest, without actually playing that well. So I mean, he's making the most of getting through when, you know, arguably he could have fallen by the wayside. But yeah, I thought, you know, Tsitsipas deserved to win today. He was still, I think, overall the better player. obviously, I did think at the end there, when Zverev saved those four match points, you know, and Tsitsipas was then going to have to serve for it, I thought, oh, could we be on for something here? But obviously, it wasn't to be in the end. But I do fear that Tsitsipas, you know, he was quite nervous today. He's obviously been in semifinals before, but hadn't obviously won one. He's in new territory. He's in his first Grand Slam final. But I just think the inexperience is massively going to show on Sunday. And
when the going got tough in those third and fourth sets, he was sort of muttering, you know, to himself. And there was a bit of negative energy. And that sort of started to creep in when kind of Zverev kind of took a hold. I think, you know, for me, the kind of the critical thing is that I think we know with Stefanos Tsitsipas, he's an emotional guy. He has a lot of emotional energy. And I think when it comes to, you know, being in a final, I think he's just going to have to temper that emotion, like that emotion that I feel like will be naturally kind of running through him, but at the same time, not let it get the better of him. And if he's able to kind of do that and manage that emotional energy, I think, then perhaps that kind of gives him a chance against Novak Djokovic. You know, we've spoken about the fact that Tsitsipas plays his best tennis when he's this cool and calm sort of character. And, you know, when even when he's not playing particularly well, if he stays cool and calm, he normally can kind of push himself and come through it. But when he is, you know, a bit more sort of critical and talking to himself and, guess sort of, you know, from an Andy Murray perspective, you know, yeah, doing an Andy Murray on him, you know, having conversations and monologuing with himself on court, it starts to go pear-shaped. And I think that's the sort of thing that he's going to have to work on if he has sort of serious ambitions of beating Novak Djokovic in the final.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's got nothing to lose, has he? He's had an exceptional clay court season. I mean, if you look back at his last eight clay events, if you go back to, you know, last year as well, Roland Garros, he's got a phenomenal record. And, you know, he won in Lyon before coming into Roland Garros. Obviously, Novak won in Belgrade. So they're both, you know, on win streaks at the moment. But yeah, he's got nothing to lose. He took Novak to five sets last year in the semis here. So maybe he can kind of learn from that particular match, but obviously a Grand Slam final is a very different kettle of fish. You know, it's the ultimate. So we shall see. I would like to see a competitive match, but
a competitive match that is setting the bar so low, Kim. Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, you say it's his first final. There is nothing to lose. You know, interestingly, Jim Courier on commentary was talking about Tsitsipas being a player who could, you know, once Roger Federer retires, a lot of the people who follow Roger Federer, he feels that Tsitsipas's game is the most sort of akin to that, and he could kind of take a lot of the Fed fans, I think, under his wing. And I certainly think if he was able to beat kind of Novak Djokovic in the final on Sunday, Fed fans, that would be another reason, I think, to kind of follow him. But I certainly think there are parallels in their game. One thing that did kind of come out of this match, which was a bit of a controversy, and kind of doing the rounds, I don't know how far this will go, but it did come out that Alexander Zverev, whose brother Misha Zverev works on commentary for Eurosport, in an interview where he was doing kind of courtside with you know, Mats Wilander in the studio, basically effectively came out and said, you know, I had a word with him, you know, during the match at a changeover, I think a set changeover, and gave him some advice. And you know, a lot of people are big time kind of frowning upon this. This doesn't feel right. And, you know, I think a lot of people will, you know, there's already a lot of kind of detractors, I think, of Sasha Zverev for various reasons. And I think they're going to look at this and perhaps widen it out to the Zverev family in general, including his brother now.
Yeah, I don't know exactly like the ins and outs of how he did this or how he would have been able to do it. But I know that, you know, on-court coaching does happen, you know, even from the coaches in the boxing or whatever. But yeah, I mean, why would you admit that as well in an interview? Because you know it's wrong. So why would you admit it?
It was really awkward. I felt like Mats Wilander dropped him in it. I felt like it was maybe an off an off-recording conversation, and then Verlander was sort of trying to have some banter with him, and then there was like a slight pause in the coverage, and then Misha Zverev kind of came out with this. So I don't know if there's going to be any ramifications there, but it certainly feels, I think, that particularly perhaps within people who follow the tour, that Zverev is this, you know, I think he is sort of painted as a little bit of a villain, which sometimes I think is a bit unfair. You know, he is a very, very good tennis player on his day, but there are things I think that are happening that certainly aren't helping his cause, and maybe kind of more general fans aren't so aware kind of that. But, you know, it's another thing I think that is kind of not helping that I think Zverev boosts his fan club, unlike, you know, I think Tsitsipas can, particularly with his, what he does, and particularly his sort of, I think, on-court demeanor, and, you know, his, particularly I think with his press conferences and his post-match presentation today, had Marion Bartoli. I think he sees Marion Bartoli as his lucky charm.
Well, she better be there on Sunday then.
Actually, Kim, I was going to say, I think a lot of people were saying that post-match love-in after that match went on a little bit too long, and there was going to be kind of like hell to pay for if we were kind of like very close to the end and that curfew did hit him, because maybe that post-match conference went just it dragged on a little bit too longer than it should have.
Yeah, I prefer it when they're just short and snappy and they, you know, get on with it. But there we go. Let's take a quick break now. But do join us in the second half, where we'll be looking back on all the results from the ladies' semi-finals and also Joe Salisbury triumphing in the mixed doubles. So don't go anywhere. This is The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to take a look back at all the other results from Roland Garros. And before we talk about the ladies' semi-finals, Joel, we have a British champion to talk about. Woo! Yeah. Round of applause. Joe Salisbury has won the mixed doubles with Desiree Krawczyk, his American partner. But most notably, this is the first British title at Roland Garros in 39 years, which is an incredibly long amount of time.
It's coming home. Where have I heard that before?
Oh gosh, does this mean England are going to win the Euros? Is that what you're saying? But yeah, they came through against Karatsev and Vishnina 2-6, 6-4, 10-5 in the match tie break. Joe Salisbury has made history for Great Britain. The last person to win the title, which was also the mixed doubles, was John Lloyd, I think. Was that when he won with Jo Drury, I think, in 1982? I think it was with her, wasn't it? But anyway, So fantastic for Joe Salisbury. You know, he's won men's doubles before, but I think this was his first mixed title.
I mean, against a really, I think, really hard, tricky opponents in Karatsev and Vezhnina, I think they were quite disappointed. I think they were the better team for the majority of the match, but Krawczyk and Salisbury really came into their own, particularly in that championship tiebreak at the end. Karatsev was particularly glum, I think, on court afterwards. He definitely was not smiling, or he found it hard to smile. But it was interesting to hear Vezhnina was saying, Karatsev, I don't know what it is, Kim, with Karatsev, but if it's his first event or whatever, he just seems to go on a bit of a run, because I think this was his first mixed doubles event. I think certainly in a Grand Slam. All the way through to the final, probably Vezhnina, they've probably not had any sort of practice time or a lot of practice time before. So, I mean, very impressive from them. But Joe Salisbury kind of winning it for the Brits, I mean, very, very, very impressive. Interestingly, though, not going to be teaming up at Wimbledon. He's already kind of confirmed he will be with Harriet Dart. So, you know, I guess on the one hand, that's great, because that's an all British partnership at home. That's what I love to see. But I guess at the same time, you might be thinking, oh, have I confirmed too soon there? Should I do a Hugues Herbert and have a chat with my doubles partner and maybe do a switcheroo?
Maybe. Yeah, Harriet's got big shoes to fill now.
I know, there's big pressure there.
Yeah, I should just say, I've just looked up the 1982 French Open mixed doubles, and it was John Lloyd and Wendy Turnbull. So not Joe Drury, but Joe Drury did win the Wimbledon mixed doubles with Jeremy Bates and also the AO. So that's who I was thinking of. But anyway, yeah. So it was Wendy Turnbull. But yes, so anyway, fantastic for Joe Salisbury. And you just mentioned Hubert and Mahou, actually, and they are in the men's doubles final. So they're back together now. So I think Mahou's probably forgiven.
Time heals all wounds.
Yes, exactly. But they are playing Bublik, who we potentially thought was going to knock Medvedev out in the first round of the singles, which never happened.
Yeah, he had other ideas. He was more focused on the men's doubles, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's playing with Golubev, so that's an all Kazakhstani pairing against the all French pairing. I watched a bit of the Hubert and Mahou doubles on the telly, and they came through in a really close match against Cabal and Farron, and the French crowd were going absolutely wild, so it was really fun to watch. So I'm sure the crowd might get them over the edge, I feel, in the final. And then we should obviously mention the women's doubles, because we do have Barbora Krejcikova in the final of the women's doubles with Katerina Siniaková. So she is into the women's doubles final as well as the women's singles final, which is insane. So she's aiming to become the first person to win both titles since I think Mary Pierce did it in 2000, so a good 21 years ago now. But they're going to be playing Iga Świątek and Bethany Mattek-Sands. So Iga Świątek, you know, she may not still be in the singles, but she's come through in the doubles, and yeah, that's going to be a really good final, I think, for the doubles alone. So I'd be happy with, I mean, it would be nice for Krejcikova to do the double or to come away with at least one title, but it would also be really nice for Świątek to get the doubles. And I mean, Bethany Mattek-Sands as well. I think this is her first major final in a while since she had that awful injury at Wimbledon.
Oh, Wimbledon.
Ago.
Yeah. Mm. God, I can still remember those. Those screams are like permanently etched into my head. They were so...
It's not pleasant.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, talking of Krejcikova, because let's talk about the... Let's talk about her run in the doubles and the singles. She beat Maria Sakkari in a really, really good French Open semi-final. Won 7-5, 4-6, 9-7 on her fifth match point. She also saved one along the way. Match lasted over 3 hours. It was a very, very good match for, you know, probably for a lot of fans there who probably might not have thought it was going to go that way. But yeah, really, really impressive stuff. And you know, before I guess we talk about that match, I mean, just talking about that sort of singles and doubles conundrum, because we spoke about that on our, you know, one of our round by round podcasts, you know, a few days ago. And with regards to Świątek, and you know, I was kind of the opinion that she shouldn't have gone into the doubles. I think as a single specialist looking to defend her title, I just thought that perhaps was a step too far. But you know, Krejcikova. You know, I would say, I know she'll probably hate me for saying this, but coming into this tournament, I think a lot of people would have still seen her as a doubles specialist. I know she's had a few singles kind of breakthroughs this season, but it's interesting to see that if she's coming from this, she came into this tournament as a doubles specialist, entered the singles probably, you know, as she was there on site and was able to, you know, get in through the rankings, etc. But she has been able to kind of get through to both of the finals. And that has been really, really impressive given, you know, the perils I think that other players have faced, like Świątek, and have sort of, fallen a hurdle along the way. But for Krejcikova to do that and to do it from seemingly out of nowhere has been very, very impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's playing well. She's playing well, regardless of whether it's singles, doubles. And, you know, I mean, she is primarily known as a doubles specialist. But, you know, she back in the day, she was world number three in juniors. She reached the Dubai final this year. She's won Strasbourg. So she clearly wants to be a singles specialist. You know, she's become very... exceptional at the doubles over the last couple of years. She's been world number one in doubles. And I think if she wins the doubles this weekend, she will actually go back to number one in doubles as well. But her singles ranking has been, you know, steadily increasing. I think she's ranked like 33 at the moment. So she is just outside the top 30, and I'm sure that will she'll go up. I don't know exactly to where she'll go up depending on the result this weekend, but she clearly, I think, has, her career has been a bit sidetracked in the doubles over the last few years, and she's probably coming back now to where she envisaged that she would be maybe a couple of seasons ago.
I think, you know, she's very you know, she's said plain and simple, kind of, I think, you know, in terms of her career, I think frustrated at being, you know, potentially kind of labeled as a double specialist. That was not what she wanted to be when she kind of grew up. And I think this, particularly this French Open, this is a statement, I think, to all those people who perhaps, yeah, label her as a double specialist. Like, no, I'm not. You know, I've got the skill and the ability to really work it on the singles circuit as well. And to get to the final, to beat a very game Maria Sakkari in the semi-finals was very, very impressive. You know, I caught the last set of this. There was so much drama because it was so, I think, unpredictable. There was so many twists and turns that even though it felt, I think, Krejcikova was kind of, I think, second best, I think, you know, for quite a bit of the match, she was just able to kind of come through it. And I loved her kind of composure on court. And there was a big contrast, I felt, between Sakkari, who was a very emotive player and feeding very much, I think, feeding off the energy of the crowd and, you know, very vocal. But Krejcikova, on your hand, very, very silent and very kind of just going about her business and didn't really draw, I think, on any sort of emotion that Sakkari was.
Yeah, she was so much kind of cooler, calmer, you know, collected, as the saying goes. And like, I think that really helped. She was very composed. Like, she went on her fifth match point, and obviously she had saved a match point earlier from Sakkari when she, you know, failed to convert hers. But to have so many match points, especially one which she thought she'd won, but then obviously the ball, you know, it was called out. Originally, or she thought it was out, but it actually, the umpire came down and overruled and said no, it was in, which incidentally on the TV, you know, they obviously have kind of Hawkeye for the TV, and it looked quite widely out on the TV, but I know Hawkeye isn't 100% accurate, obviously, on the clay, but I personally thought it was out, but I don't know. But I felt bad for Krejcikova. She celebrated, and then
it was awkward.
I know it was just awkward. Oh, you know, really awkward.
I was wondering if, because she celebrated straight away, it came across as like a bluff to the umpire, as like,
right,
you know, I'm celebrating because it's out, you're going to believe me, sort of mind games.
Maybe, possibly.
But the umpire, yeah, the umpire had completely different, you know, different plans. And, you know, I'm glad kind of Krejcikova came through that. But that match point specifically did raise an interesting question about Hawkeye, because it is being used on television in the UK. I'm not sure if it's being used on other people's kind of services around the world, but it's certainly being shown in the UK. And it's, as you said, Kim, it's not completely accurate on a clay court. And, you know, people, I think, aren't aware of that, I think, when it's kind of shown at face value on the TV. And I think it raises a question on should we even be showing Hawkeye on the TV if it's not 100% accurate, because it could paint the wrong picture, and I think it could potentially cause more controversy than maybe is needed, because I genuinely felt in that moment, on that point, it didn't really help proceedings, I think, because it definitely would have been the talking point if Sakkari had gone on to win the match.
Yeah, oh yeah, it would have been. And I think it would have sparked a lot of debate. And that's why I was also quite relieved for Krejcikova that she did manage to get over the line, because I thought, oh, she'd be absolutely ruining that. And she would have perhaps a valid case, because, you know, I'm not convinced it was in, but probably did just catch the back of the line. But I mean, she is a cool figure, though. And I really liked her post-match on-court interview. And I especially liked her sort of little tribute to Jana Novotná, who, I didn't realise this, but Jana Novotná coached her. She was the last, Krejcikova was the last player that she worked with before she passed away like 4 years ago now. So, you know, she was on board with Krejcikova, you know, as Krejcikova was kind of competing in like ITF events and coming onto the tour. So obviously a very influential figure. And I think, you know, she's obviously, it means a lot to her, obviously. And you know, the fact that she's kind of doing it for Yana Navotra, I suppose, and the, all the work that she did with her. So I thought that was a really nice, like, touching moment. And I'm sure if she wins tomorrow that it will be, again, you know, a very emotional one because of that, especially.
Definitely. It was really, it's a really kind of touching story. And I recommend to listeners to kind of read a bit more about the sort of Novotna legacy I think she has left with, you know, the next generation, the up and coming Czech players. And Krejčíková is certainly part of that. And she talks very glowingly about the impact that, that Jana Novotná had on her career, particularly at the beginning. You know, I was kind of reading around the fact that, you know, Krejčíková knocked on Jana Novotná's door in their kind of hometown and was like, can you help me play tennis? And Novotná, to her surprise, Novotná was kind of like, yep, I'll help you. And that's sort of where that sort of, I guess, that relationship kind of kicked on from. And, you know, it's just very, it's just a very touching story, I think. And, you know, sadly, Jana Novotná kind of passed away back in 2017, but her, you know, her presence and I think her impact on the game, we can see that in the in players of today. And I think that's a fitting tribute to her. Just one other thing on in that match. And I think it's not a criticism of anyone. I think it's more of a criticism, I think, of the authorities or the rule makers. But that medical timeout, Kim, at the end of the second set, I think it was by Krejčíková. It took 7 minutes. And it's getting, I think we're getting to a point now on the tour where I don't know if it's a bathroom break. I don't know if it's an injury, but 7 minutes off court with your player just kind of sitting on their chair or whatever they're doing. I just don't think it's a good look.
No, I think it's kind of taking the piss when it goes beyond a certain amount of time.
I'm going beyond a toilet break.
I mean, to be fair, is this, she could have had some issues going on. We don't know. That's the thing. I mean, I'm sure we've all been to the toilet and it might have taken longer than 5 or 6 minutes sometimes. But yeah, it's apparently she did one in the Dubai final as well between like the first or second set. And that was like 11 minutes. So I don't know if this is like a tactic that she uses or I'm sure she's not intentionally trying to mess her opponent up. It's maybe just for her own kind of
it just feels that if we've got a shot clock now, I feel like it's inevitable that we should be having a shot clock countdown timer for these medical timeouts. Like maybe it's from 5 minutes counting down, and if you're not there by zero, then the opponent can hit a serve and win a point or something, or you know, or every 30 seconds you're late, you lose a point or something. I just think that, you know, if we're kind of getting into this more kind of regimented way of the presentation of tennis, and it's not so sort of laissez-faire, and I think perhaps medical timeouts are perhaps the next thing that need to be addressed with regards to that regimentation.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, because you just don't, like, what if a player then, you know, would like to have one and it's really genuine and they do need more time. Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it, to police. But I still think more players don't abuse it than the players that would, so I don't know. But it's just another thing to throw into the equation, isn't it? But we saw, Krejčíková will be playing Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in the final tomorrow because Pavs came through against Tamara Zidanec 7-5, 6-3. So a bit more of a straightforward encounter in the first semi-final. I wouldn't say Pavlyuchenko wasn't entirely convincing in this match, but she definitely had a lot more consistency and sort of she was a bit more together than Zidanec, who I thought just, you know, did well to hang in there, but it really wasn't playing as well as she has been. And I thought it was a bit more erratic in the semi-final, which is to be expected. You know, she's into this stage of a tournament for the first time. Oh, as was Pavlyuchenkova, but, you know, still more experienced.
I think with Pavlyuchenkova, although I think she was probably like Zidanec, kind of excited to be in the semi-finals, I think, you know, particularly when that match was over and she was at the net, looking at it on TV as a fan, it felt that it was more relief than anything. I felt like, you know, she felt that this was her moment. You know, it's been forever long, and I think she's sort of self-aware of this situation that she is in. And, you know, in this moment, she's got this opportunity, I think, to really, in a really big way, and I think this is sort of weird to say, but in a really big way, she's got an opportunity here to sort of redefine her career in one tournament, because I think if this had never happened, we would probably be and she retired, and we probably would have been reflecting on Pavlyuchenkova's career as one that, you know, promised so much with, you know, getting to, you know, umpteenth quarterfinals, but having still something left in the tank, because it felt relatively, you know, still unfilled for someone who's got, you know, lots and lots of talent. But if she can go on and genuinely win this French Open, then you could arguably say, you know, her career, she would have probably done the best she could with her career and talent.
Yeah, I wonder, will she suddenly like decide to retire a bit like Flavia Panetta or Bartoli, because it's like they finally, you know, reached what they have, like their one goal. But I mean, she's still, I think, a bit younger than both of those players were when they did that. So I'm sure she wouldn't, but it does sort of have Caroline Wozniacki vibes. You know, she won
like a late bloomer.
Yeah, right at the end, and then, you know, retired not long after. And I mean, Wozniacki's like the same age, I think, as Pavlyuchenkova. So, you know, she, you just don't know, do you? But yeah, it just does go to show that different players will come through at different times, and it's, you know, not necessarily if they haven't done it by 25, 26, it's not too late. I mean, interestingly though, Kutrychkova, this is only her fifth main draw appearance in the singles at a slam. And so she's got to, you know, obviously a final. And I think in the last 20 years or so, it's only Andreescu that's actually managed to do that in that number or less main draw appearances. So that is very impressive from Kutrychkova, because I think Pavlyuchenkova, this is her 50th slam. I think it's an open era record for the most appearances at a slam before making, you know, a final. So kind of got a tale of two halves there. I'm sure Pavlyuchenkova would have loved to have reached a final in like her fifth slam, but you know, 50 is better late than never.
I mean, just looking forward to that match, where is your head at in terms of, because you've got a clear sort of experience there in Pavlyuchenkova, maybe not necessarily at, you know, being in a Grand Slam final before, but certainly with years and a number of matches under a belt versus Kutrychkova, who, yeah, only fifth main draw appearance. I don't think she's even been in the main draw at Wimbledon,
no,
and the US Open. That's surely got to, I mean, for me, that's surely got to count for something.
Yeah, I hope Kutrychkova isn't physically tired, you know, because of all the tennis that she's been playing. She did have quite a quick double semi-final today. She won quite easily. So hopefully that will have, you know, helped rather than it being a long one. So there's that to consider. But I mean, Pavlyuchenkova also had some strapping on her legs. So perhaps they're both not going to be 100% there physically. But I think Pavlyuchenkova obviously has more experience, but will that come into it? Because they're both in a final for the first time. So I think, you know, they're both going to be feeling the nerves. And I don't know if, I feel like my head says Pavs, but I feel like my heart says Kutrychkova.
I think Kutrychkova has been playing the better tennis, if I'm being honest. But Pavlyuchenkova is doing a sort of Sasha Zverev and just coming through and winning matches. And, you know, maybe she'll just kind of continue that momentum. I wonder if the weight of expectation might play more on Pavlyuchenkova because of that time it's taken her to get to this point. It didn't obviously affect her, I think, in the semi-final, but a final will be a completely different ballgame with a title on the line. So, you know, it will be a fascinating matchup. Before we finish, we're gonna end on some predictions. So we've got the men's final and the women's final. We are obviously well known for our spot on predictions, but we've got Novak Djokovic, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and then we've got Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova versus Barbora Krejcikova. What are your, give me your ladies and men's champions. How many sets are you thinking?
Oh, Well, do you think, here's one for you, do you think the women's singles final will last longer than the men's singles final?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Because I think Kutrychkova Pavlyuchenkova, it could very well be a bit of an epic, potentially. Could we see it going the distance? I mean, Kutrychkova obviously had a very long single semi, 9-7 in the third. I don't know if she... well, would that help? Well, I don't really know. It's so hard to predict, which is, I'm looking forward, obviously, more to that one than the men's, probably because it's such a novel.
Come on, Kim.
Novel
I'm
going
to have to piss you. I'm going to have to piss you. What are you going for?
Krejcikova in three and Novak in three comfortable sets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Interesting.
What about you?
I have got to go. I do agree with you on Novak. I think Tsitsipas will play good tennis, but I think Djokovic will play better tennis. And I think he's just going to be able to just do that each set. So I'm going to say Djokovic in three as well. And then for the women, I'm going to say Pavlyuchenkova. I'm going to say Pavlyuchenkova in three. I think it could be, I think that one could be quite topsy turvy. I'm expecting to see more nerves, I think, in that ladies final versus the men's final. I think that men's final could be a very high quality match, but I still see it being quite a tight three set victory with maybe the odd tiebreak here or there, for Djokovic. So those are my predictions.
It's also on at the same time as England's first match in the Euros. Great timing. But yes, I mean, regardless, I hope Krejcikova manages to get one of the titles. I'd be sad for her to be in both finals and not to come away with anything. Interestingly, the girls' singles final is also a Czech versus a Russian. So it's sort of mirroring the ladies' singles. But also the boys, they've got an all-French final. So, you know, we were saying the other day about French tennis in the men's side being, you know, where are their youngsters coming through? Perhaps they do have some, because they actually got, they did a complete semi-final lineup. It was all French boys, which is the first time I think that's ever happened in the boys event. So perhaps, you know, looking up for the French. But we will be back on Sunday evening to review the finals from Roland Garros 2021. And it's been a very dramatic evening. I have to say, I'm quite exhausted now from all of the, you know, emotions and what
have
you.
You got through it, Kim. You got through the episode. So,
I think doing it's been quite cathartic as well. Like, just I feel better than I did when we started. So that's something. But yeah, that's it for another evening at Roland Garros.
Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of The Passing Shot. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all things at the French Open on your podcasting platform of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Castbox, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to hit that subscribe button, and you can listen to us also on the DownloadTennis.com app. If you have been enjoying listening to our coverage at the French Open and you want to help out the show, make sure to leave us a rating and comment as well on Apple Podcasts.
And you can follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Passing Shot Pod. So do give us a follow and a like if you don't already. And you can contact us via all those social channels if you'd like to get in touch with the show. You can also email us as well, passingshotpod@gmail.com.
And we will be back on Sunday evening, UK time, for our finals round by round catch up. I hope you can join us for that. It should be a cracker. And we will see you again soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.